Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the KE Report. Starting out the report, my premier guest today is Rick Ackerman. I have known Rick for an awful lot of years. Very good friend of the family. Whenever I'm looking for input on economic futures or conditions, Mr. Ackerman is the man who I always go to. Rick, all they're talking about right now is inflation. What are your comments on that, sir?
Well, thanks for inviting me on, Al. It's nice to connect to your audience. Everybody's talking about inflation, and I think it's a tough call, really. You know, I've been a deflationist for the last 40 years. I'm not really going to run up the white flag. You know, my idea of deflation is something precipitous. In other words, we have some liquidity event in the financial system, and it wipes so many zeros off the balance sheet that the Fed can't possibly keep the system liquid. That's really what I believe is going to happen. When the Fed puts as much money into the system as it has, and there's as much credit jangling around, and companies that have $40 or $50 billion worth of surplus are actually going out to borrow money to buy back their own shares because they don't want to use the real stuff. They don't want to waste what they consider real money on even stock buybacks. So, you know, you can see the asset inflation everywhere, and you can certainly see it in the prices are just unbelievable. You know, I'm going even, it doesn't matter whether I'm going to the pharmacy or to a restaurant or to this or to that, the prices are absolutely amazing for everything. And it's nothing like the inflation we had in the 70s. I think the definitions are being conflated there to make it easier to talk about inflation today. You know, the press always goes by, they're too lazy to use anything but the old script. But the fact is, the 70s inflation was driven by wages. It was what you called a spiral, meaning prices rose, wages rose to keep up, and then prices rose again, and it just kept on going like that. But we don't have anything like that in this economy. The inflation is so very different, because even though, yes, there is a little bit of wage inflation now, certainly at the minimum wage level, nobody really expects that wage demands are really going to be pushing all the cost of everything skyward as they did in the 70s. So this inflation is very different because it's really just based on an asset bubble. So whereas the 70s inflation, 1970s, just kind of happened organically in this spiral fashion, the quote-unquote inflation we're having today is no more, it could be absolutely deflated. It could be the bubble could burst tomorrow because it's an asset bubble that's essentially feeding the inflation. And it's not like wages have gone up so very much that they should be pushing the price of everything higher. It's mostly just money that was sitting around in the accounts of it's asset accounts of the let's say upper tiers of the middle class. So this quote unquote inflation can, if a bear market began tomorrow, what we call inflation today would be history. Everything would be deflating. So that's the nature of this inflation.
I agree 1,000%. I have to tell you, I am 77 years of age. I'm living off of, quite frankly, assets. And I am very, very concerned about the future. And I agree with you about the anomaly that this particular inflation represents. Why wouldn't I agree with you? You're so much brighter than I am. But what I'll tell you what bothers me is there is absolutely no concern on the part of the government, specifically the executive office, of increasing our debt. Just announced yesterday, even more debt is going to be many student loans, which represents hundreds of thousands of dollars, are going to be totally forgiven. That's not going to work. I really believe, Rick, that we are headed for a very significant economic collapse for that reason, among others. Can you comment on that?
Well, you know, I don't think there's one chance in 100,000 that we're going to avoid a major collapse. But of course, those of us who have been predicting it for the last 10 or 20 years have had a failure of the imagination. You know, no one could have anticipated 30 years ago when we were in the S&L crisis that we would inflate to so much higher levels. You know, back then we were discussing the S&L crisis, which in dollar terms was only who knows, it was penny ante, $600-700 billion.
Yeah.
And you know, I thought we'd had it then. But if you would have told me that the inflationary juggernaut to keep deflation at bay would inflate to quadrillions of dollars, and I mean to include the derivatives market in that, you know, a hyper leveraged financial edifice that is 10 times the size of the actual global economy in goods and services. But so you never, it's really hard to pick a top on craziness. You always tend to underestimate how crazy things can get. And that's where we are now. You know, there's some reputable technicians, chartists out there who say, hell, this bull market could run for another decade. And I'm ready to see it on the charts, but I'm also tending to get short at each place where I get essentially a good technical rally target.
Yeah.
So you really, everybody knows that the system is so discombobulated. There are no market rates in anything anymore. The bond markets have been destroyed. We can no longer price money. The price of borrowing is not any longer moored to market rates, so you can't say how far can that craziness go. And if you can drag out 10 charts that all say, well, this is topping and that's topping and we've got a divergence here or there, the charts can't make this thing stop.
No.
I mean, and I think some of the really best cycles forecasters out there, my friend Peter Elides for one,
yeah,
he tracks cycles going back for centuries, and this particular cycle, it would make you think, well, the cycles have been the natural law of cyclical behavior has been cast aside, that it no longer applies, but it will. It's just let's just say we've lengthened the cycle to create room for the really big one to happen.
Rick, let me ask you this. We're down to just about a minute here, and I know you're in a bit of a hurry, and I certainly appreciate your time for taking a few minutes here to chat with myself and my audience. I am predicting a major catastrophic economic event to occur, and I think that's, quite frankly, what the Democrats are going to be known for. They're going to try to blame Trump, but he's got nothing to do with it. Can you just comment on that real quick?
Well, I think Trump's out of range right now.
Yeah.
For any blame that might be affixed for whatever collapse is coming. You know, it's arguable whether it will happen during the remaining years of Biden, the Harris administration. It seems pretty obvious Biden isn't going to finish his term.
Right, right.
But I don't, you know, there's no certitude about a collapse coming while the Democrats are still in power.
There you go.
And I think the collapse is going to be so horrible, unimaginable, really, that it's going to essentially transcend not political differences, but whatever political solutions you think will be put into play, they will fall way short of what we're looking at. You know, this catastrophe is going to get... it may not bring Democrats and Republicans together in the get nice sense of the word, but we're going to be so busy dealing with economic catastrophe that politics, strictly speaking, will no longer obtain.
That scares the daylights out of me, Rick, when you say something like that, because 9 times out of 10, my friend, you're right.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Going to stick with economics in the first half of the KE Report. Rick Ackerman has some pretty interesting things to say, predicting a major meltdown in the investment climate. Want to get another opinion on this, and that is from Richard Postma, a.k.a. Doc. Doc is an expert chartist. He has been on our program now for almost 20 years. All of his conclusions have proven to be accurate. Doc, are we going to have a meltdown in terms of the conventional markets, and if so, why?
Well, you know, I look at things technically, and
right.
The thing I find interesting about the general markets, if you look at the Dow Jones and the S&P and these markets, the conventional markets as we call them, technically, when you watch them right now, I find some really interesting things. The big thing is the further you go out on these markets technically, the better you can watch the potential turning of a trend, or you can, you know, really define what's going to happen. You can on daily and weekly charts now, and those are probably good for traders, but I'm an investor. I'm not a trader.
You're right.
And when you look out on a monthly chart, let's take the Dow Jones Industrial Average, for instance. There's what we call momentum indicators in these charts and strength indicators, and those are a couple of things I really follow. And when you look at the momentum indicators, one of them is what we call the MACD, which has to do with convergence and divergence. The momentum in the MACD for these markets are currently at highs I've never seen. And I'm going out 20, 30, 40 years. And that tells you that we're vastly overbought right now, and you ask yourself how much higher these momentum indicators can go, and as far as I can tell, this is so unusual that we've got to be peaking out here right now, and I felt that way for the last month and a half to 2 months, and it's starting to look dicey up here.
What does that mean? I mean, I don't understand what the word dicey means. Define that in your frame of mind, would you, Doc?
Well, that's a term when I was a kid we always used when things were looking a little bit shaky,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I mean by dicey. And we're at levels on the momentum indicators, like I said, that we haven't seen in years. And so that, I think, portends that we're nearing a top and that the odds of moving significantly higher have really dropped. So that's where I think we are on the conventional markets right now.
Okay, so but let's talk about getting really dramatic. Would you go as far as to say, I mean, moving down a bit is very different from a total meltdown. Define what you mean by moving down, would you?
Well, you know, generally people feel a bear market correction is defined by the 20% drop.
Okay.
And I think that's very plausible, Al. I think that's significant in itself. Now, others are talking about a drop even further, but who knows? Nobody can predict that. But we certainly are set up, I think, for a significant move down. Now, having said that, when you get up to these levels with these momentum indicators, they can just hang around up top for a while, you know, and you could just slowly grind higher yet. But I don't see a significant move up anymore. So if you look at all kinds of other fundamentals, price to sales, you know, and they pull out all kinds of other ones, we're at the top on all of these things. So you ask yourself, at what point can they no longer support these markets with just flooding the system with dollars? And we may be getting to that point.
Well, here's my question. There are a lot of us who are elderly, I want to say, and we're looking for financial security. My days of trading are over. My days of speculating, for lack of better terms, I still enjoy talking about it. But in terms of my well-being, my capital, I'm looking for something that's going to give me, if nothing else, at least a 5% appreciation a year. Am I going to find that in the market right now?
Not with the conventional markets. Well, I think that's probably over. And in fact, with the levels we are, there are some that are saying that the next 10, 15 years, you'll be lucky to return yourself 1% to 2%.
Well, but let's throw in another caveat. The Democrats, if these markets do what you think they're, what you say they're going to do, the Democrats are not going to get reelected. They are not going to hold a majority. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think irrespective of the markets, I think they're going to have trouble in a year, year and a half with some of the things that they've been supporting. I think more and more of the populace is starting to figure out their narratives and the fact that they have nothing to offer in a positive way to this country. And I think anybody with any sanity and rational thought have finally had it. And I think there will be a big midterm change potentially for the Democrats, regardless of what the markets do. But if the markets before then also top out and move down significantly, that'll only be an added thing for Wall Street to get upset about. And Wall Street generally, I don't think, has any principles anyway. But they're not going to like that.
Well, my personal opinion is I'm not sure at this stage. You're talking about momentum indicators. You're talking about overbought positions. I'm saying that from what I know about investing, which has been somewhat, it's helped me out a lot over the years, I would say that the markets have gotten to the point where they are not supportable. Yes or no?
Yes, and I referred to that earlier by saying in spite of how many dollars they print, there gets to be a point where you have destroyed the free market so much to the point where then there will come a time where they can't control it anymore, and the Fed is at that point. They talk about tapering. Well, that's laughable. The first hint or whiff of a significant downturn in the economy, and they will reverse again. They have no options left, Al. It's a mess.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. No options left on the part of the government. I would agree. Stick around. Going to be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for our almost regular meeting with Jeff Dice. Jeff is an old friend of mine who is the president of the Mises Institute. Now, Jeff and I were talking a little earlier off mic, and I read him the final paragraph for a very interesting article that was written and published by the Mises Institute by one of their contributors. The final paragraph says, in the end, as the government goes further and further, Mises wrote, it will finally arrive at a point where all prices, all wage rates, all interest rates, in short, everything in the whole economic system is determined by the government. And this clearly is socialism. Jeff, in the first segment on a weekend radio show, Rick Ackerman feels very, very strongly, and he expressed this opinion that the United States is headed for a huge collapse. Socialism, I think, is going to be the answer. Do you have a comment, Jeff?
Well, I hope we're not headed for an economic collapse, because look how divided we are, even when the economy, at least ostensibly, is okay. We all have gas and groceries and electricity and running water and all that sort of stuff functioning for the moment. But, you know, the thing about socialism is that we have arguments over how to define it.
Mm-hmm.
If we think back to when we were kids in school, it was this idea that that's ownership of the means of production is a socialist concept, and that private ownership of the means of production is a capitalist concept. And that's still, I think, largely the correct definition. Mises thought that if a country still had a functioning stock market,
mm-hmm.
that was an indication of a capitalist country, regardless of, let's say, all the welfare and, you know, other forms of interventionism that a government, and most Western governments, which are sort of soft social democracies of one form or another.
Right.
So they all engage in this welfareism. But at what point does it rise to the level that we could call it socialist? I think if you take someplace like North Korea or Cuba, people can look there, see the deprivation, see the starvation, see all the horrors of just trying to get, you know, I've read some stories lately now that Cuba's in the news about,
right.
People taking 3 or 4 days going around to different groceries just to find a few basics to put together a meal. I mean, we all understand that when there's absolute authoritarian control over goods and services and the production of those goods and services, yeah, that we can call that socialism of one stripe or another. So the question is, where's America? And where would the left like America to be? Well, I'm, obviously jaded. I'm biased.
I know. So am I.
I think the left in this country does want socialism. I think they already have quasi-socialism in terms of government control over banking, over education, over healthcare, over the military, over insurance. So there's already industries in this country, energy. For example, there's industries in this country which are so heavily regulated, even though the profits tend to be privatized, the costs tend to be quite socialized. So we're heading in that direction. And, I think people who voted for Joe Biden, I don't think they really get it, Al. The people surrounding Joe Biden are way, way, way to the left of him.
I would agree with that. That's something, that's an impression that I've had for quite some time right now. Quite frankly, the main reason, I'm not saying the only reason, Jeff, but the main reason I didn't vote for Biden is because I don't like his current philosophy, at least what I perceive it to be.
Yeah, he's someone who is, of course, a lot older than most presidents, I think easily led. The fact that he wasn't an ideologue, particularly in his many, many decades in the Senate, doesn't mean that he doesn't harbor sympathy for deep left ideology. It just means that he had the political chops to sort of stay above it and watch out for himself. So a lot of people believe in things, but they don't act on them, like Christians, for example, who fall by the wayside in their personal conduct. So I think that the racial obsession of the new Biden administration is a very dangerous thing.
Okay.
I think the collusion with big tech, we're just hearing today, Jen Psaki, the press secretary, talking about how the Biden administration is telling Facebook what kind of misinformation it ought to kick off its platform when it comes to vaccines. I mean, we're getting every day closer and closer to a government corporate melding. And so we can call that socialism in a sense, but it also looks and smells like fascism.
Mm-hmm. I think fascism is something I would truly agree with. The difference between fascism is kind of an interesting difference in the sense that fascism basically states that the government knows what's best, whether you like it or not. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. It's scary. We ought to be looking at Cuba and learning the lessons from it. I've noticed that some of the left-wing groups in the United States have been a little loath to call it communism or to call it socialism. They want to act like what's happening in Cuba is not the result of their preferred economic program, but that it's some sort of aberration because these bad guys took over and control everything. But that's always going to happen in any system of governments. You're always going to have oligarchs with undue amounts of control. So from my perspective, capitalism having the wealth of a country spread out and privatized is far and away the best approach to keeping these oligarchs at bay.
I would agree with that 1,000%. Jeff, I want to ask your opinion about something, and I'm not going to cut you real short. We've got at least 3 minutes for you to discuss this. Do you think we're going to have a financial collapse in the U.S., and if so, why? I personally am scared to death.
Boy, I don't think we're going to have a financial collapse, in the near term. I think we're going to have real inflation. I think for the next decade, for the 2020s, let's just say, I don't think they're going to be able to contain inflation like they did in the 2010s.
Right.
So from that perspective, I think slow productive growth and high inflation is going to look a lot more like the 70s than the 2010s. So that, of course, is something that troubles me and something that concerns me and scares me. That's a little different than an economic collapse. I think when Rick Anderson or other people talk about that, they mean something more strident than that, something like 2007, 2008, but bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the Fed is absolutely committed to keeping interest rates low, and I think the Fed is absolutely committed to propping up the stock market thereby. So, whether we have a collapse or not might not be as visible as you imagine, because nominal prices, especially with all the fiscal and monetary stimulus, might remain up there. So, a lot of people might not be able to conceptualize that things are crashing, even though the nominal the amount of their paycheck or the nominal price of the Dow doesn't seem to be coming down precipitously. So it's all about buying power at the end of the day. So I think we're going to have a very ugly, slow motion Japan style stagflation decade would be my that would be my opinion or my projection for the 2020s.
Well, I'm kind of glad to hear that, I have to tell you, because at my age, I have my money pretty well wrapped up in the conventional market because I think, if anything, that's going to survive. You're not going to have the gyrations there, perhaps, that you have in the precious metals markets. Don't tell Ron that I said that, but, that's kind of my feeling. And I think you're right on when you say that the government cannot afford to not prop up the stock market, because if that's happened, and we're down to 30 seconds or so, if that happens, whoever's got the control of the executive office and Congress is going to be out on their ear. Final comment, Mr. Dice.
Well, let's not forget there's $28 trillion of federal debt, and that's generally below 2% interest rates. If that became 6% interest rates, it would quickly become the biggest item in Congress's budget every year. So that's another reason to imagine that interest rates ain't going back up anytime soon.
Boy, isn't that the truth? That is simply common sense. Jeff Dice, thank you so much, sir. Hey, welcome in. Time for the KE Report, the final segment. I want to talk a little bit about the internet this morning. I am pretty upset about what the internet, I think, is doing to our society. Let me explain, and then let me certainly set the stage for your comments and get Jim's opinion on this. We're recording this on Thursday, and I went on my email about half an hour ago, spent some time, and the interesting thing that's going on is all of my emails are now coming from sources that are posting on the internet. Not all of them, but certainly a large percentage of them. All the postings are negative, and this, I'm afraid, has very little to do with making our society a better place. Let me tell you what I mean by that. I think people are getting very, very pessimistic about what's going on in our country. All you have to do is listen to the first segment that I did with Rick Ackerman today. Rick is not a pessimistic guy, but I want to remind you what he stressed. He feels that our country is economically and very possibly politically going to go absolutely in the toilet. I'm not sure that that's the case, but I will say that with all the negativity that's being circulated by the internet, all of the untruths, I have to say, that are being circulated by the internet, they're sure not doing me any good at this time in my life. Jim, what do you suggest the people to do to stay out of the pessimistic sector?
I think it all comes down to politics, unfortunately. And I think it has. I think in order for people to have some sense of normalcy in their life, they've got to vote for people that are going to support values that they that they would like to see in this nation. We've got, you know, here's the reality. It's not the internet. The internet is just a in my view, it's not the internet. It's actually just a pipe for information. There's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of propaganda out there. But when you scratch the surface and actually get a little deeper, you start looking at the number of issues that are facing America right now, and people are very nervous about it. I'll go through a quick list. Number one, I think, on people's minds is the crime surge. You know, you've got these major cities where leaders have actually actively gone out and said, we're going to reduce police funding, and then murders are skyrocketing. Violence is skyrocketing. Even in Bellingham, I had talked to some people yesterday, in neighborhoods that just a few years ago were very safe, people didn't even lock their doors, cars are being broken into, gunshots are being heard, but the law enforcement's not even following up because they're restricted. That's one. Voter fraud. Actual trust and faith in our system. Half of America right now, more than half of America, according to polling, isn't confident that our voting system is valid. Border surge. You've got a massive influx. Over 1 million people illegally apprehended for illegally crossing the border in just 6 months of this year. Oil pipeline shut down. Gas prices almost, you know, at 70% of what they were just 6 months ago. Inflation, 6%.
I think, Jimmy, I think you mean gas prices have increased 70% from what they were 6 months ago.
Yes, I'm sorry. I've inverted that. But yes, they've increased. It's way up. Inflation is way up. Critical race theory being perpetuated and this 1619 agenda, 1619 project agenda, blaming all white people and racism for all the ills of the nation. Gender studies in schools. Go through this list of issues and you wonder what the average American is thinking at home right now, because if they look past just the surface propaganda being perpetuated by mainstream media, they're like, wait a second, this is affecting me in my neighborhood. This is right here, locally. What can I do about it? And my belief is it really does come down to politics. It's local politics, it's your school boards, it's your city council members, your county council members, your public utilities district leaders. All those people matter, and they need to represent your purpose, not you supporting the government. And I think that's where we're failing, as where people are very uncomfortable right now with all the information that's coming out.
Jimmy, I want to tell you, I have to agree with you, and I have to say I stand absolutely corrected. There are some liberal websites and there are some conservative websites that I think do stretch the truth quite a bit. But I think our listeners are savvy enough, intelligent enough, sophisticated enough that they can see through that. I just pray to God that they do, and I really hope that they take everything, not at face value, but they really examine everything that they see on the internet. Every situation, Jim, that you brought up is absolutely 100% true. I was paying a couple of bucks a gallon for Supreme gas not too long ago. Now I'm paying close to $5. The crime rate in the United States is skyrocketing, and I don't see the government really doing anything about that. The rationale that I get whenever I bring this up with my liberal friends is it's not the government's responsibility. That is a local issue, whether you're talking here about local governments. Police defunding or refunding, meaning cutting the police force, that is absolutely the wrong thing to be doing right now. You talked about parts of Bellingham where people in the past didn't have to lock their doors, and now they do. We live in a pretty nice area north of Bellingham, Jim, as you know. You're just building a new house, and I have to tell you that something in the back of my mind has said, Corlin, start locking the door at night. Start locking the garage. You're making a good point. You have made a very good point, and I have to say that in retrospect, I stand corrected. I'd like to hear some solutions from you, Jimmy. We got 2 minutes.
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, I think this administration right now is that the national administration is attempting to divert information from people that makes a difference. And there are a large number of people that just kind of, you know, what they're just not involved. They just hear the clip on the news for a couple minutes a day. They don't pay attention. Many of your listeners actually pay attention. They look, they do research.
Right.
The problem is people need to spend more time and understand what the impact of their local community is. And then they've got to realize that, you know, if you escaped California because of high taxes and because, you know, the crime rate was up and because there were, you know, feces in the street in San Francisco and you come up here in our neighborhood, don't vote the same way you did down there. That's the number one problem. People don't understand. And the second one, and really the biggest problem, and I'll get right down to it, is media propaganda from corporate interests that are undermining people's ability to do research. The internet is being blocked in some ways, and major media sources are, and of course, internet service provider type people are actually looking to silence people. The administration is literally talking about, according to Politico, talking about reviewing people's SMS, their text messages, just to stop propaganda from their belief. This is authoritarianism. We've got to stop it. We've got to get back to basic fundamental principles of the United States and our individual rights and our ability to look and observe in multiple ways what is out there and make good decisions for our future.
Jimmy, I agree with you 1,000%, and you know that. And I think I made a really good point in this final segment here when I said I stand corrected. I think a lot of people who perhaps agree with you, and I have to also say I stand corrected. We have to be careful of the information that we assimilate on the internet. You really, really need to verify absolutely everything. There are an awful lot of advertisements on the internet that are coming out from websites that are simply there, not necessarily to further the goodness of America, but to further their revenues. Jim McKinney, thank you. Be back next week with you, Jim.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.